The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
We'll be on Wednesday night at 11 p.m. right here, and we know where Pierre Maguire is going to be Wednesday night our time. How you doing, Pierre?
Excellent, Mitch. Good morning to you, or good afternoon to you.
All right. How was your weekend in South Korea?
Yes. Late and early, getting ready for another day.
How was your weekend?
Good. Lots of hockey. It was very, very strong. Good games. One of the best games I probably saw the entire tournament. I had the privilege of working with Cord Miller, Sweden and Finland. Just a fantastic hockey game. The only negative part was Rasmus Dahlin was a healthy scratch for the second time in the tournament, which is really crazy when you think about it.
Help us out there. Sorry to interrupt, because you mentioned it's the second time, and in the one game he did play, he didn't play very much.
No, I don't know. I don't know what's happened internally. I talked to their coaches. They seem like they like him very much. Watched them practice. Seemed like he fit in really well. Watched his skill level and thought, wow, that's extraordinary. And for the second time in, you know, three games, he didn't play. So I don't know. It's not an injury situation, I can tell you that. His agent, Donnie Meehan, is here, actually, in Korea, so I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
All right, for those who didn't see the games, the women's games, now we know that we have a matchup. We knew we were headed for this matchup. The question in terms of taking a longer view of women's hockey is how much progress has been made based on what you saw in these semifinal games by the other countries?
The Finns have made significant progress. The Swedes have dropped back a little bit. The Russians, I think, will be very strong going forward. They're a very young team. So I think that bodes well for the future. Canada and the U.S., it's just an arms race. They just keep pulling away from everybody. They really do. This gold medal game's got a chance to be, you know, an instant classic. It really does, based on what we saw earlier in the tournament where the Canadian ladies played a tremendous game and eventually won, but it could have gone either way. It's just an arms race. They just keep getting better. They're younger players on both sides of the border, whether it be Canada or the United States. They get better and better every single time. I started doing the women's tournament in 2006 in Torino, and to see where it was in 06 and to see where it is today is off the charts amazingly great in terms of the progress that the girls have made, both conditioning-wise, athletically, and just awareness. It's phenomenal to watch. It really is.
Okay, well, I'm asking this with Canada in mind, but as you say, it applies to the U.S. as well. The best way to incorporate when you're dealing with a roster that includes a lot of young players who are going through a bit of a new experience, and I know they can practice at home prior to the event, but what's the best way to integrate them in a combat battle situation in a tournament like this in a short period of time?
Well, I think what they've done is really wise. You know, the practices have been really good, just watching them. Most, you're talking about the women's side, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. No, and I would say that the best thing that I've seen is just how they're utilized during the game. I mean, they don't force feed people that aren't prepared to handle the assignment. And so they break them in slowly but surely. But I haven't seen on either side, whether it be the Canadian side or the U.S. side, Rod, I haven't seen players that can't handle this type of theater. I mean, again, they've played a ton of games against one another in pretty large environments, whether it be in Minnesota or San Jose, just in the touring part of their schedule, where they would be overmatched. I think every single young lady that's part of either one of these teams is really prepared for this.
I guess we'll talk more about this tomorrow, but I'm curious if can you use what went down 4 years ago as motivation?
Well, for the Americans, they can. 10 of the young ladies are on the team, played on that game. And I talked about it yesterday during our broadcast, Mitch. One of the most difficult things I've ever had to do in terms of TV was interview Megan Duggan after the Americans lost. She was a captain of the team. And it was so emotional. We started the interview and she just started crying. And so it wasn't on live TV. We were live to tape. So we did it again and started breaking down again. And I almost started crying watching her because I could feel the pain in her voice. I could see it in her face. And finally, we got it done. She sent the nicest note afterwards, after the Olympics, and it showed me just how much these ladies care about being champions. And so I think they can. I know one thing. The 10 young ladies that are back, they've used this as an amazing motivational tool to try to, you know, obviously win a gold medal. They've been close so many times, and they just haven't done it. You know, Vancouver, they got upset in Torino. They lost in Salt Lake City. They won in 98 in Nagano. So the Canadian ladies have done unbelievably well. The American ladies, not nearly as well in terms of they only, and they say it themselves. So don't say these are my words, because they're not. For them, it's gold or nothing. They really, truly believe it's all about winning gold, and that's been indoctrinated into them.
Wednesday night, 11 o'clock our time. Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690. Today in Philadelphia.
Just after practice. No, I think it was more of a quick thing. It was my agent called me right after practice and said we had something good, and maybe 30 seconds after it was done.
So there's your man, Pierre, Nicolas Deslauriers, finding out after practice today that he's got a brand new two-year contract worth close to $1 million, under $1 million for both years, and it's one way.
Well, I'm really happy for him. He's obviously put the work in. He's found a home. The coach believes in him. He plays a role that the Canes don't have a lot of guys that can do that. That physical, rambunctious, you know, in-your-face kind of a style that is pretty important over the course of an 82-game schedule. I thought he was a good pickup when they got him. I'm really happy that he's done well. I'm not surprised he's done well. The biggest thing for him is just, you know, make sure that you keep, and I know his work habits are good, so I don't think that'll be a problem, but just keep it on the rails, you know. Don't finish the season and then, you know, hang out with your buds and think that, well, I've got it made. That's the wrong approach, and I don't think he'll do that, but that's the only thing that, you know, I would be concerned with, and I'm not even that concerned with it, but I'm just telling you that's the only thing that could be problematic. But no, he's done very, very well. I'm not surprised.
Piero, what did you see when you watched him play in Buffalo, and then when he started playing for the Montreal Canadiens, did you notice an extra jump in his step playing for his hometown team?
No, I've always noticed the way he plays. Again, this is where you got to watch subtleties in players' games when you're watching the game. And again, that's for management people or scouts. The, you know, fans don't, that's not their job. They're to be entertained and have fun watching the game. But the thing about him is he's always played that certain role really well, Mitch Gell, and I think that's part of what endears him to people that understand the game at the management level or at the coaching level, is that you've got to have those guys. You have to have the rambunctious guy that can bring energy and attitude, and he can do that. And the Canes have kind of created that role for him. I don't think you can expect to see the same kind of, you know, offensive numbers that maybe he's put up in little sequences here, but I do think you can see a lot of energy come from him. I always felt that he could skate, he was strong, and he played with energy.
I don't know, I can only answer for myself, but you know, it was my 10th year in the league, so can't control that, and you know what, we'll see what happens. I'm not sure obviously what's going to happen, but like you said, it's still a week away. We got games to play before then, but yeah, it's out of my control.
How badly you want to stay with the Canadians?
Guys, I'm kind of, I just answered five questions, but yeah, I mean, I obviously love Montreal. There's no surprise. I'm the captain of the greatest franchise in the world. So, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. I can't control that. So, you know, I'd appreciate really not talking about it until maybe the deadline, or if something does or doesn't happen, because I really don't see the need to talk about it right now.
There was Max Pacioretty in Philadelphia. Some of that could have been him quoting you, talking about waiting this out from late last week. I don't know what you saw of any of the NHL games, let alone the Habs in Vegas, Pierre, but it was just much of what we've seen lately on the road with the Canadiens, just breakdowns all over the place. A lot of players just not into it. And it becomes, at this point, 1 week from today, the trading deadline, a waiting game. What do you think is going on there with players like Pacioretty and some other veterans who might be on the move a week from now?
No, not an easy time for anybody. You could hear it in his voice. He's hurt. He's stung. You can tell that. He's really I think, been hurt by this entire openness. I don't know how all this got out so quickly. I don't know if internally they leaked it. I don't know if somebody that they were trying to do business with leaked it. But clearly it got out there, and it's created and it opened a wound, I think, more than anything else. So it's obviously tough for him. I can tell you this, and I know it for sure, that he is really proud to be part of that organization, and I think he's extremely honored to have been part of it for as long as he has. And he's never been one that's lacked confidence, but you can almost hear the trepidation in his voice when he was doing that interview. I don't think it's an easy time for him. I don't think it's an easy time for anybody that still wants to be part of the team. Some guys, I couldn't say all, but some would probably say, oh boy, I hope I get traded. I don't think he's one of them. I think he wants to stay and be part of the solution, not part of the problem.
You just touched on something using the word leak. That's one thing I give Mark Bergevin and his staff a lot of credit for. Most of the moves that he's made, we've had no advance warning. Which, when you think of it, protecting your own players in that regard, that's something that should that's admirable, I think, for an organization. So would it affect, I guess, picking up on one of the questions Rod asked you on Friday, if you're having these conversations, would it affect follow-ups if you know where it came from, if it's out because of some scout or executive or assistant GM or a GM on another team has leaked it?
Oh, yeah, I think it could, absolutely. I mean, it would if I was involved. I would pick the phone up and say, hey, you're the only team I've spoken with, and I know it didn't get out of my office, so somebody in your office or you are putting this out there. And, you know, I don't appreciate that. We're talking about a high-profile player. So you've got to be really careful. I'll just go back to my own personal experiences. I'll never forget, being part of the Ron Francis, Frizzardi, Zalapsky, and John Cullen deal, and Alfie Samuelson and Grant Jennings were on the other side of that with bringing them in from Hartford. That trade never got out. Like, that never, ever, ever. It was, a small group of people that were aware of it, and we were trying, this was in the era before cell phones, we didn't want to announce anything because we couldn't track John Cullen down. Well, Craig Patrick couldn't track John Cullen down. He was at the movies. And so this is in the era before it. So none of this stuff even got out until we found, or Craig Patrick found John Cullen and was able to reach him. So again, you got to be really, really careful when you're doing these kinds of big deals, especially with big players, big name players, because it definitely can affect the outcome of a deal.
Yeah, it reminds me of Brian Burke. He was absolutely livid when Dougie Hamilton's name got out there, right? And he pretty much threw the GM who leaked his name under the bus without naming the name or team, but everyone had a pretty good indication of who it was after Brian Burke stepped up, because he was pissed off.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I work with Brian, and I can tell you that he made a substantial deal, and it was a good one, by the way, to get the draft rights to Christopher Pronger, the second overall pick, and we made a gigantic deal with the San Jose Sharks. And again, there was a small group of people that were aware of it, and that never got out until the trade deadline, or until the draft. That never, ever, ever got out.
When it comes to showcasing a player, or the term that I know you like, polishing the apple, so to speak, can a performance over the last week, say 2 to 3 or 4 games before the trade deadline, can that make a difference in asking price or whether a deal is actually consummated?
It can. Absolutely, it can. It also depends on, how much confidence the team that's acquiring the potential player trusts their pro scouts. So there's something to that term, too, that ability, too. But I would say, yes, absolutely. If a player's starting to trend upwards and you see, he's got energy or he's got more skill or he's finishing plays off, then you say, we have a big interest in this player. On the other side of it, if the player's receding and he's not nearly as robust, he's not nearly as tough, he doesn't finish plays off, then you say, maybe we're a little cooler, and you say to the GM that's trying to trade the player, hey, your guy's trending the wrong way. We don't have as much interest. And then maybe the GM says, we'll give it to you at this price rather than that price. So, yeah, absolutely, that makes a difference.
Would you be aware of any NHL team who would be, for lack of a better term, desperate enough to send to the Canadiens a first-round pick, a second-round pick, a young NHL player, and a prospect for Max Pacioretty?
So did you just say five components?
Four. A first-round pick, a second-round pick, a young roster player.
Bringing it up. So repeat, a first-round pick?
A first-round pick, second-round pick, a young roster player, and a prospect.
I would be really surprised if that were the price point. I'd be real. That sounds high to me.
Well, that doesn't mean it can't come down.
No, absolutely right. It doesn't. I'm just telling you.
Is this how it's done, Pierre? Is you know, this is sent to everybody or anybody calling, inquiring, or hear this, and then it's a waiting game?
Well, usually what happens is, let's just say a GM will call and say, what are you doing, Pacioretty? And the GM says, oh, not much right now. I'm probably holding on to him. He's my captain. And so a couple days goes by, or maybe 3 days goes by. It depends on the relationship the GMs have. And then the GM will call again and say, you know what? Here's what I'd like to get Pacioretty from you. And then Mark Vergevin says, well, let me talk to my guys. Then he calls him back and says, you know, to get him, it's going to require a first-round pick, a second-round pick, prospect A, you know, whomever it may be, and a roster player. And then I changed, no, we can't do that. And then a couple of days goes by and says, how about if we do this? And Mark Bird, I said, let me check with my guys. That's usually how it goes. These sometimes they're just quick, and other times they're not nearly as quick. But when you're talking about this kind of a deal, usually it takes a little bit longer.
Jakub Jerebek didn't play again. What is it, eight? Are we on eight games now? Amoro went through a similar phase. But Jerebek, they have to make a decision on. He's UFA. Julien was asked today.
But we are evaluating. We're not pushing anybody aside. But, you know, there's some decisions that have to be made within the next week or so. And we have to be ready to make those tough decisions.
All right. So I'm assuming by him saying that is why we're seeing Schlemko and Ben and Moro. And, of course, Alzner's locked into a contract. Is there anybody who would want to add one of those guys at the deadline who, further to Rod's question, needs to see more at this point?
I would be surprised. I told you when they got Jarvik that it's going to be a transition. There are going to be nights when he's going to be solid, and there are other nights where he's not going to be a solid. It's not easy to go from playing, you know, on the big ice to the small ice, especially when you're a defenseman and they close the gap on you as quick as they do in the National Hockey League. There's a huge adjustment. And I think it was Rod that asked me a while ago, what would you do on a contract? I said, well, probably he's a 5'6", you know, 6'7". He's in that range. That's where he is in terms of a player. So, you know, I don't think you're going to have to overspend to keep him. But you got to be wise in terms of how you evaluate him internally. And so if I were doing that, that's where I'd have him, you know, 5'6", 7", probably closer to 6'7", on a good team. That's where he fits right now in his career. So, you know, again, you got to be really wise in terms of how you sign players like that.
But if you're not sure, right, and you want to see more of him at the NHL level,
you gotta play.
But you're playing, yeah, you're playing these other guys who are depth guys ahead of him, presumably to try to get an asset. I'm not sure. You know, what kind of asset?
Well, we totally agree.
Okay.
I mean, you got if in fact you're interested in potentially keeping the player, you got to play him. It's that simple. But again, this is just the reality of it. We've known, you and I, and I think most of the people listening, the defense as it's constructed isn't good enough to compete on an everyday basis in the NHL. So they've got a lot of fixing to do there. It's not one or two guys. They got a lot of fixing to do there.
Toronto beat Detroit yesterday with Austin Matthews scoring with 30 seconds to go. But talking about leaking, it seems the whole world knows that Peter Mrazek and the Flyers seem to be on a collision course, especially since Michael Neuwirth went down. They won with their third-string goalie. Their first-string goalie, Brian Elliott, is already out. Would you be – if you're Ron Hextall, does that make sense, or do you shoot higher?
I would try to shoot a little higher. I like Peter. I think one of the underappreciated parts of Peter's game is ability to move the puck. He's really, really adept at that. Doesn't get nearly enough credit. But he hadn't shown enough consistency at the NHL level. He was very, very good in a Calder Cup run with Grand Rapids on a really good team that won the Calder Cup championship when Jeff Blashill was coaching there. So he has won at a pretty high level. But I don't think the scouts have seen enough consistency from him at the NHL level. Alex Lyon, who's playing there right now, was a tremendous goalie at Yale. They signed him as a free agent out of college. He's put up very, very good numbers in the American Hockey League. And they have Carter Hart potentially coming down the road, not that far, who just won gold with Team Canada at the World Junior. So their goaltending situation is actually pretty solid going forward. I just don't know. If they think they have a chance to compete for the Cup, then maybe he shoots higher. But if not, I think he probably stands pat or maybe makes a smaller move to give him a little insurance going into the playoffs.
Have you got Slovakia in the U.S. today?
I do.
Okay, men's hockey, Slovakia in the U.S. How do you see this?
Tight, very, very tight. Both teams well coached. Craig Ramsey's done a fantastic job with Slovakia. I think there's a little bit more firepower on the American side of things, so I think that can give them a little bit of an advantage. They're quicker. The Americans are quicker than the Slovaks. The Slovaks are bigger, and they're hard to play against because they are so big, and they do play such a smart neutral zone game. Craig is a tremendous, tremendous coach. So I think it'll be tight. I don't think it'll be a blowout either way. Probably the U.S. with a little bit of an advantage, but not much. Then later tonight I do Finland and Korea. And so that'll be probably the end of Jimmy Pack's team from Korea, who's been such a good story over here. The Finns are really, really a solid team. And this Elli Tolvanen is spectacular. He was a 30th pick in the draft last summer by Nashville. He'll be in the NHL sooner rather than later. He's tremendous, tremendously talented.
And so it looks like Finland, in all likelihood, the winner of that game plays Canada.
Right. And that'll be a hard, very, very difficult game for Canada. That'll be a hard one to play, only because of the structure of the Finns, the grittiness of the Finns, their ability to play a North American-style game. The Finns are very, very difficult, and they've got a goalie, Koskinen, who's 6'7", almost 6'8". He does not let you see a lot of the net. He's in the way a lot. He's a former New York Islander, didn't play a lot in the NHL.